ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Canto 4, Chapter 4, Text Number 1. Maitreya uvacha etavad ukta virarama sankara patyanga nasham hyabhayatra chintayan. So Hridhidrikshu Parisankita Bhavan Nishkramati Nirvashiti Dvidhashasa Maitreya Uvacha. Maitreya said, Etavat, so much, Uktva, after speaking, Virarama was silent. Shankaraha, Lord Shiva. Patni Anganasham, the destruction of the body of his wife. He, since, Ubhayatra, in both cases, Chintayan, understanding. Suhrit Didrikshuho, being anxious to see her relatives. Parishankita, being afraid. Bhavat, of Shiva. Nishkramati, moving out. Nirvishati, moving in. Dvividha, divided. Asa, was. Sa, she, sati. Translation, the great sage Maitreya said, Lord Shiva was silent after speaking to Sati, seeing her between decisions. Sati was very much anxious to see her relatives at her father's house, but at the same time, she was afraid of Lord Shiva's warning. Her mind unsettled, she moved in and out of the room as a swing moves this way and that. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Sati's mind was divided about whether to go to her father's house or obey the orders of Lord Shiva. The struggle between the two decisions was so strong that she was pushed from one side of the room to the other, and she began to move just like the pendulum of a clock. End of purport. So I'm going to read the next verse. Explains what's going on inside. Text 2. Sati felt very sorry at being forbidden to go see her relatives at her father's house. And due to affection for them, tears fell from her eyes. Shaking and very much afflicted, she looked at her uncommon husband, Lord Shiva, as if she was going to blast him with her vision. She didn't. Purport. The word apratipurusham used in this verse means, quote, one who has no equal. Apratipurusham. Lord Shiva has no equal in the material world in regard to equality towards everyone. His wife, Sati, knew that her husband was equal towards everyone. So why, in this case, was he unkind to his wife? So unkind that he did not allow her to go to her father's house. This distressed her more than she could tolerate. And she looked at her husband as if she were ready to blast him with her vision. In other words, since Lord Shiva is Atma, parentheses, Shiva also means Atma, it is indicated here that Sati was prepared to commit suicide. Another meaning of the word Aprati Purusha is the person who has no rival. What was the first meaning? One who is equal to all. Aprati Purusham. Here, the personality who has no rival. Lord Shiva, since Lord Shiva could not be persuaded to give her permission, Sati took shelter of a woman's last weapon, weeping, which forces a husband to agree to the proposal of his wife. End of purport. So you've been hearing in the verses that concluded chapter 3, it's not just that Lord Shiva said no. First, he explained the likelihood, if you do go, what will happen. And based on what will happen, the likelihood of what will happen, then you'll be very sorry that you went. And not only you'll be very sorry if you went, it will be equal to death, the insults that you'll receive. So he didn't exactly say no. He gave reasons why this is not a wise move. At least one presentation is being made that Sati was concerned, while she really wanted to go, she was concerned about the warning. And then the next verse is, she really wanted to go, and why is her husband saying no? And because he's kind, he's equally kind to everyone, aprati purusham, he's equally kind to everyone, why is he not being kind to me? Why is he saying no? And so, there's anger. At least that's what's being indicated here. There's anger in her eyes. She looked at her husband as if she was going to blast him with her vision. Because as he is very powerful, she's very powerful. Now, not that she can blast Lord Shiva, not that powerful. She's very powerful. Extraordinarily powerful. But it's not precisely angry at her husband, it's more this wanting to go, getting a warning, the consequences of going. No, in that force pulling her back. And another dynamic is not wanting to disobey her husband. It's not that he said no, but the indication is no, it's not advisable. This shouldn't be done. So it's going against her nature of being chaste to her husband to go anyway, and she went anyway. That's the next verse. She walks out the door, goes to her father's home. And the explanation is because this is due to her weakness. I mean, specifically, it says a weakness as a woman, but it's a weakness. Man can be weak too. Knowing what is to be done and not doing it. Like Krishna is speaking to Arjuna, Hridaya Dorbalyam in Bhagavad Gita. Weakness of heart. Weakness of heart is when you know there's something they should do and you don't do it. Not just laziness, but weakness of heart. Something that should be done. Or, conversely, something that shouldn't be done. And I do it anyways. And where does the intelligence go when there's this weakness of heart? There's all this justification. Yeah, but. And then the intelligence starts to make a very nice plan of why what isn't to be done is okay. Or what is to be done, it's okay if I don't do it. Because, yeah, but. But the intelligence is still existing and operating, but it's misdirected. It can be properly directed also. And interesting, here in Chicago you're reading the fourth canto, in St. Louis we're reading the third canto, where Diti, who is the sister of Sati, has done her bad act. She's applied pressure upon her husband, who then yielded, and a child, two twins were conceived in her womb that were, she knew was going to be bad arrangement. As soon as the deed was done, bad arrangement. And not so much was Diti looking for the rationalizing, or, well, it's okay because da-da-da-da-da-da-da. She knew that what was done was wrong. And she was not so much exactly even trying to minimize the consequences. She just wanted the children that were going to be born, and wanted the protection of her husband, and the protection of Lord Shiva, and the protection of her sister, Sati, to convince Lord Shiva to please not destroy the child in her womb, because you're very merciful, although you're also easily angered. Like, you know, it's a very different example of a lower nature prevailing over a higher nature. Because her higher nature is she knew what was to be done and what was not to be done. And she yielded to her lower nature. It's severe consequences, big time. Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu consequences, big time consequences. So the verses that we're just reading this morning, this is that moment of decision. And preceding the moment of decision is a moment of indecision. Because there's really nothing to be decided. She just follows her husband and it's taken care of. She knows who her husband is. She knows that she's getting the right advice. And yet I want to go to my relative's home. Why are you being unkind to me? that indecision is a decision. And following that indecision is the decision. She goes. And the consequences follow due to weakness. And this weakness is very simple. It's an attachment to the bodily conception. My relatives and enjoying with my relatives and fine ornaments and fine garments and so on and so on and so on. Enjoying the social circumstance. It's not at all enjoyable. And she knew it. And still she was wishing it for, because that's the nature of the determination of the conditioned soul to try to enjoy is so strong. Even time and time and time and time, endless n number of times, it's getting slapped. Continuing to try. It's universal. You know, the message is, this is not meant for enjoyment. Duh. As they say, it's not meant for enjoyment. That's the message. But, you know, I want to enjoy, I want to enjoy, I want to enjoy. You know, elevate that to, you know, like a full-fledged demon. You have Jarasandha, who so many times he was totally annihilated. And, you know, so determined, he got a bigger army and made alliances with others just to go and defeat Krishna. Because his two daughters, who were married to Kamsa, and Krishna killed Kamsa, the two daughters went crying to their father, please take revenge. So, yes, I take this vow, I'll get revenge, I'll destroy Krishna. And he's totally humiliated. The first time when Jarasandha went, Krishna alone stood on the battlefield against so many Akshauhini divisions of soldiers amassed by Jarasandha, and Krishna alone defeated them all and left Jarasandha standing on the battlefield alone. He said, now you can go home. And as he was going home, he was thinking, this is too much to bear. You know, it's too humiliating. And then his ministers were saying, no, no, Jarasandha, you can do it. Yay, Jarasandha, get some more armies and go do it again. You just weren't prepared. Be prepared next time. You can do it. Yeah, I can do it. So determined. Now, knowing that that's the material condition, that by design, the material world is a place of misery. Dukkhalayam ashashvatam. It's designed that way. You know, like, read the label. This product is meant to give you misery. Not even a buyer beware. It's like, you know, that's the purpose of this product. Designed to give you dukkha. Please buy it. Hoping that you'll get sukha, and you buy one. And sure enough, it gives you dukkha. So then you want to get another one. So you can have more opportunity to get sukha, although it says designed to give you dukkha. Distress. Misery. And there's, you know, varieties of misery. This kind, that kind. Adidaivaka klesha, adibhaudaka klesha, adiatmaka klesha. Pick your misery, or combination. And we keep doing it. It's the being unreceptive to this message of that Krishna has on the package. And, you know, in scriptures telling us over and over, and how many times have we heard those who are reading and hearing Prabhupada's teaching, all of us, you know, that the essence of material life is sense gratification. And the pursuit of sense gratification binds the performer to so much misery. Yehi samsparsha bhoga Dukkha yonaya evate. I want to get enjoyment, and that very spirit of wanting to get enjoyment. Dukkha yonaya evate. And we just keep taking the punches. I want to enjoy. It's really a donkey. It's really very, very foolish. So, that's the lower way that most people do. Most people don't have Lord Shiva as a husband or a qualified person to guide them. But that hesitation due to thinking on the material platform, and on the material platform, I want to enjoy, put those two things together. You get a bewildered state and not good consequences. Lord Shiva, when Sati made her appeal, Lord Shiva simply smiled. Although we heard internally he was also just thinking of Daksha, didn't have good thoughts because of the piercing, cruel, malicious words of Daksha. Knowing that this is the nature of this person, the same thing is going to happen. So, continuing to place oneself under the guidance of a qualified person is very important for spiritual progress, because our tendency to be attached in our mind to being an enjoyer of material circumstances is so strong. Staying in a nicely protected position of under the guidance of a qualified person. And when that pull of the lower nature comes, don't entertain it. Don't linger. Because if you linger, what happens? Bhagavad Gita tells us what happens. By contemplating the object of the senses, one develops some attachment. It's funny, I was just coming from St. Louis to Chicago, boarding the plane, and the last people to get on the plane were the pilot and the stewardesses from some other flight going to Chicago from St. Louis. So they were, like, you know, all the luggage racks were filled up top, and so one of the stewardesses was trying to fit her luggage, but she had a little handbag. And so the pilot behind her, he said, "I'll take that." So he held on to her handbag, like purse kind of thing. She put in a roller bag, and then she went to reach for her handbag, and he said, "I become attached to it. I don't think I want to give it to you now." Because just like, you know, contact makes us very quickly attached. Very quickly. And you can spin out on that one, you know, how we become attached to something very quickly. You know, our little space where we lie down at night, and how we have our this and our that, and if somebody comes along and moves something, hey, just move something. Or like this story from Ramanujacharya's biography of two grihasthas who appeared to be very opulent, and Ramanujacharya was a sannyasi, and he was showing such affection to them that the renunciates, the brahmacharis and sannyasis, were like, "Hey, what's going on? You know, this person is like, he looks like a gross sense gratifier, perfume and opulent jewelry, but Ramanujacharya is giving them so much attention and affection. What's going on?" So he demonstrated, and I can't remember exactly how it happened, but he had some persons examine the quality of his sannyasis and this couple. So the sannyasis, at night, they went around, they, you know, took this sannyas dhoti and put it over there, took this sannyas dhoti and put it over there, and that sannyas dhoti put it over there, and just mixed everything around. And when they woke up in the morning, hey, who moved my dhoti? Where's my gamsha? Hey, you know, attached to their little items of renunciation. And then the same was, you know, invite the husband to come see me and then go to his home and steal from the home, steal the ornaments of the wife. So she was sleeping and they literally took the ornaments off this one side of her body and then she rolled over so they could take the ornaments from the other side. When she rolled over, they said, oh, she's waking up, and they ran. And her husband came home after seeing Ramanujacharya and asked his wife, you know, well, she explained what happened. He said, why did you do that? You scared them away. She said, the poor brahmacharis, they are so poor that they, you know, they had to steal my ornaments. I wanted to give them the other side. Oh, you did the wrong thing. Should have just given it to them. And then the persons who witnessed these two, you know, the detachment, so-called, of the sannyasis and the attachment, so-called, of the householders. Why Ramanujacharya? Because they just simply wanted to serve the Vaishnavas, as opposed to, you know, serve consciousness. My gamsha, my dhoti, my space, my territory. We become attached very quickly with other examples. We become attached very quickly. Although we know the philosophy very well, it's all flickering. It's phantasmagoria. So what's there to become attached to? Let us become attached to Krishna. And that's our program. And it doesn't mean being negligent about temporary things. We'd be responsible about temporary things, but not attached to temporary things. Attached to them. Our happiness is that we have something and we lose something, we become unhappy. Or it's, you know, it's no longer functioning or something like that. It's an important lesson, the fundamental lesson. And one more time, how do we stay in that alignment? By descending mercy. And if one moves oneself away from that descending mercy, big difficulty can arise. Our capacity to discern how to take the next step, it gets bewildered. And we can very easily start going in the wrong direction and suffer unnecessarily. And in this case, even feel some ill will, at least it appears that way, towards your well-wishers. Sati is looking towards her husband. She looked at her uncommon husband, Lord Shiva, as if she was going to blast him with her vision. Why are you being unkind to me? We see this in children, and we can see it in big children, named adults, where, why are you doing this to me? Why are you being unkind to me? By giving good advice. Okay. Any comments or questions? Yeah. He does have that quality, and he's manifesting it. Yeah, it was not how it should manifest precisely, as, you know, it should match up with my desire. And then you'll be, you know, merciful. Then I'll know that you're merciful. So our expectation of Krishna's mercy or descending mercy is that, you know, a conditioned state is that it matches my, you know, my plan, my sankalpa. And if it doesn't work out the way, then, oh, why are you being unkind to me? Yeah. Sure do. Yeah. Or lower nature and feel, yeah. Follow guidance. Real simple. And part of that guidance is to get the context of just hearing this from Srila Prabhupada. It's two things. Prabhupada was speaking of the virtue of forgiveness and not being judgmental. That is to say, here's a person that's on their path to Krishna, and I'm on my path to Krishna, and that person's path to Krishna doesn't have to match mine. But if my expectation is projected on the person, it has to match mine, or there's something wrong with another person. Then, no. You feel something. You don't feel good. So it's important to look. I mean, look at a lot of things, but look at the fundamental nature of a person. If the fundamental nature of a person is that they're very sincere in moving on the path of devotional service, Krishna will carry them to the goal. It may not look like what I think it should look like, or it may not look like my path to the goal. You know, but Krishna has many part and parcels that are all very different. And what he chooses to do to bring them to him, it's very different. We each have our different needs and our attachments and our, you know, ways that Krishna is going to interact with us. There must be allowance for that. Someone showed me a little video clip of what's the man who was in South Africa who was in prison for so long and then became, during apartheid, became liberated. Yeah, Nelson Mandela. So it was a little clip of Nelson Mandela once he became some government officer, that he had people working for him, you know, in his cabinet or his service. And then, you know, they came to him with this, you know, I'm trying to do and look at what these people are doing and yada, yada, yada. And he got out from behind his desk and came right in front of them and said, forgiveness has to be exhibited. It's not like, you know, just forgive and forget. I mean, you know, like that, just don't worry about how things come out. But it's a very important part of moving the hearts of other people is to have the capacity of forgiveness. If they're, you know, the standard and isn't being met, and or they are following the standard, we just can't see it because it doesn't match our idea of what that standard is. And then some, so let go of that by forgiveness, genuine forgiveness. It was nice, nice example. Because it's not just like, okay, now I've forgiven the people that put me in jail, and now I can be, you know, a bully. Or not, you know, I no longer need to exercise that virtue of forgiveness. Knowing when to exercise it, when to put one's foot down is also required. But if the starting point, we had this with Shastivar in St. Louis, we had this same discussion about, not exactly forgiveness. It was related. I can't remember exactly what it was. Yeah. Showing love to another person before discipline. That was the topic. And there must be some acceptance, like on a very fundamental level, like with a child or whoever, or it can be a peer, that there's, because we were discussing like this, that there's something that isn't right. Like he gave the example, you know, I want a car and a certain kind of car, and I don't have the money, so I go steal the money from a person and get caught and get brought before the judge and say, oh, judge, please don't discipline me because you should be very kind. You know, you should show love because, you know, that's what our teaching is. So that's like, that's really extreme. That's criminal. And you could find a part of kindness to a person is because of some criminal act, it's appropriate, certain standards of punishment, not vindictive, but loving. This is good for, you know, on some proper basis, not a tit-for-tat basis, but a at least religious, if not spiritual, basis. But let one be act from that place. That's where forgiveness comes. And even if there's, so if there's forgiveness, one can still take some action that's appropriate. And, you know, this particular example or thought of someone that's not keeping a standard. How can I address myself if I'm like behind, before I even speak or act, is this spirit? I can't be thinking in a detached and for the welfare of the other individual kind of a mode. It just gets colored. Like sati. Something else? Jitendriya. Oh yeah, I've heard that one before. I've heard you say that one before too. No, I've not heard that one. Yes. Yeah. Called Golden Shackles. I've heard that one before. I've experienced that one before. Okay. These aren't Prabhupada says. You started with, you know, Prabhupada says. Little mix is okay. Okay. Yes. Amplify your volume so they can hear in the back. On both sides. I thought you were first speaking about, you know, observing somebody that's struggling. Back to that. Oh, but you're now speaking more about the person who is struggling, but not seeking guidance. But it can be the other side, the person that's in the guiding position that doesn't say anything. And you know, the social interactions become mutually impersonal. But there are times when to say something and there are times when to not say something. There are times when to inquire and there's some times to internally process. It's good after some internal process to then inquire. How does this sound to you? Does this seem right? Am I thinking in the right way? Certainly a cure, going back to the fundamental thing, is the message of this section. To become spiritually elevated, we require elevated association. That relationship of elevated association should remain very active and strong. Anything from over on this side? Okay. Prahlad, anything? Okay. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.